Welcome to the Being Cyber podcast. Today's guest is going to talk to us about threat intelligence, which is a really unique career choice in cybersecurity. So let's dive straight into the conversation with Jules.
So today we've got Jules going to talk to us about threat intelligence on the Being Cyber podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Jules.
No worries.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and what you're doing at the moment. Threat intelligence is, I think a lot of people think they understand what threat intelligence is, but what does it mean in your context?
So, yeah, it's a vast web. So I guess where you would start is, what is the purpose of threat intelligence? So I guess my main purpose for the work that I do day to day is to protect companies from being attacked, to detect if a company is potentially going to be attacked, and then how to prevent that attack from occurring. So yeah, I'd say they're the three key points to threat intelligence for anybody who doesn't know.
Okay. So what does that actually mean day to day then? What are you doing? Where are you getting this sort of intelligence from?
So you can get it from a multitude of different places. Obviously, you can get it from a threat intelligence vendor. You can get it from open source intelligence. And you can also get it, I guess it sort of falls into the open source intelligence category as well, but from the dark web. Infiltrate forums, sit in forums, look at what's going on, and then sort of relay that information to turn it into something usable. And yeah, see how we can use that in real time. Because obviously, if threat actors are talking about a certain type of attack, that's something that you want to know about.
Yeah, and I suppose there's a lot of verification that has to happen because there might be multiple sources. Do you have to look for multiple sources to verify something?
100%. Never trust anything you read, especially this day and age. Obviously, you know, if it's coming from The Guardian or other newspapers are available, you trust that with a certain level of scrutiny. But other things such as people's blogs and other bits and pieces out there, you always have to go to the source to see what's been said. But you also have to bear in mind that the source can be edited. So screenshots are imperative, especially when carrying out investigations. If you've seen something that you think, oh my God, I'll come back to that later. In threat intelligence, you can't come back to it later, it'll be gone. So you've literally got to capture it, get it, hold on to that thing, and then, yeah, analyze it, see what you can do with it, see what's being said, and yeah, what they're planning.
Yeah, it must be quite a fascinating kind of area to work in. How did you get into threat intelligence? What made you sort of go down that path?
So I've always been curious about breaking things. I've loved literally like just dismantling computers, taking them apart, putting them back together. Although if you asked me to do it now, I'd probably be like, oh God. But yeah, so I started off in like sort of service desk roles, just supporting sites, supporting global rollouts of different provisions when security was tightening up for NIST and all that sort of compliance that comes with that. And then from there, I guess I just got an interest in, well, hang on a minute, if I'm, you know, trying to make us comply with things, how can we actually defend against things? And this is where I sort of got my interest for threat intelligence and sort of said, okay, how, like at the time, we didn't have a way to bring those things together that was a single point that we looked at. We all just went off like in our little silos and did things and checked for things. But if you've got an Excel sheet recording it, it's not the greatest. You probably want to have a program that goes, okay, that's been done, this has been looked at, especially with critical incidents. So yeah.
So talk to me about how you got from there, from service desk into security then. Did you decide you want to do certifications? Was it a job opportunity just to sort of go down that compliance route? Because obviously compliance to threat intelligence, how did you make that leap?
So it was, I'd been working for a certain company for a little while and I'd been in service desk, but I'd sort of reached the end of my service desk life. I wanted to do more, but I couldn't do more because the more was beyond my reach in a service desk role. So basically I explored options within the company that I was at and just went over to the security team and spoke to them and said, look, I really want to transition can you help me do that? And if so, that's fantastic. How do we do that? And like you said, is it through certifications? But with this company that I was with, it was very much an internal process of actually the certifications, not they don't matter, because that's not relevant in every single situation. However, in my situation, it was that they wanted me to come in, get a feel for what the team was doing. They wanted to put me in a compliance role first to sort of lead me up to that and see how I handled that first. And then once that was done, I sort of went back to them and I was like, right, look, I've done this thing that you asked me to do. I think I've done it okay. Us women are really good at talking ourselves down. I think I did a bloody good job. I've rolled out a global project of data loss prevention. Please now let me into the security team. So I guess I was happy for that verification step because it allowed me to show them that I was serious about it and that I wanted to do it. But I wasn't necessarily an academic, so I do struggle with the certification side of things. And that's something that I've always struggled with. So for me, that was the perfect route for me to get from A to B.
Yeah, you say you struggle with certifications, but I can see you've got your GIAC certifications, which are really, really well regarded and really hard.
Yes. Well, I think that's like the single most proudest moment when I got that certification. Because, I had GCSEs, but that's about as far as my academia went. I just wasn't good at school. I didn't understand things. Teachers didn't have the amount of time it would have took to help me understand things. So I sort of bumbled my way through it.
But saying that, teaching styles, well, I won't go too far into teaching styles, but they haven't really changed in the last couple of decades, have they? I think it's a tough job that teachers do, but there's, I know particularly with Caps Lock, we see a lot of the teachers are reskilling to get into cybersecurity now because it's a bit of a thankless job as well. So if somebody wanted to get into threat intelligence, what sort of skills do you need? Like what sort of base technologies would you say is important? I know it's not an entry level job. Do you think you need that time on a service desk or?
Not necessarily. It really depends what your interests are. Like the issue with threat intelligence is that you can get into threat intelligence and go down a wrong path very, very fast. And that does happen to quite a majority of people, I would say. You know, they get an interest and they sort of see, oh, well, hang on a minute. I can get however much money doing that legitimately, or I can work for a ransomware gang and I can get 5% of the ransom payout. Well, hang on a minute. Yeah. So a lot of people get distracted by that. But the one thing that I would say is if you think at any point that you've done something that you shouldn't have, if it's not to your own network, you've done something that you shouldn't have. So never, ever, ever delve outside of your own remit unless you have permission, and that's written permission, not just of course you can have a crack at your neighbor's Wi-Fi. Don't do it. Just don't. That is a very fine line, because I sort of got to that point where I was like, oh, I was doing password sniffing and Wi-Fi analysis on Wireshark and all that sort of stuff, and I was like, I could just sniff what's around me. And then I was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it, because it's illegal. You don't want to get into that part.
I suppose it's the with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, it does. It does. And knowing when to engage and not engage, like with forums, forums.
We've gone there. Or Discord.
Yeah, but Discord versus Tor, very different. So being and as well, being on Tor, do you have a reason to be on Tor? If you don't, you probably shouldn't be there. And because you will see horrendous things and you can't unsee those horrendous things. And that's another thing that you'll come across in this sort of job is, yeah, you get CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material. You get people hired to kill. You get people hired to hack. You pretty much anything you've ever, I say wanted, that's the wrong word. But anything that has gone on in the world, you can probably find there. But yeah, don't go looking for it, because it's not nice and it's not pretty.
Yeah, I know somebody else is very passionate about protecting schools and the data from schools and child passports and things like that. All that sort of data is on Tor and different parts of the dark web. So it is scary what you can see. How do you switch off from that then? How do you sort of get home at the end of the day and go, right, we're going to forget about all that horrendous thing?
Well, the problem is I work from home. So I literally like turn my computer off, turn my light off, and then I just leave the room. But no, it's in all seriousness, like the things that I'm looking for, don't ever touch those subjects. The things that I'm looking for, threat actors, I want to know what they're up to. I want to know what they're doing. I want to know how they're doing it, without getting into their group, because that's just too risky. And as well, when people do these things that are like interacting with them on XMPP and Jabber and Top, you're just opening yourself up for, yeah, them to find out where you are. Because let's face it, they're professionals in that remit. You don't want to mess with somebody that you don't know their skill set.
Yeah, and also they're anonymous, aren't they? Like, you don't know who you're dealing with. It's a handle that can disappear at any time and pop up as a new one. So with threat actors, do you have like, right, today I'm going to look and research, I don't know, Great Bear or whatever the latest names are, Fancy Bear. And then tomorrow, like next week, I'm going to do a new one. Like, how do you kind of prioritize who you're going after? Is it a certain target that you're looking at, a certain sector, or is it a certain threat actor that you're looking at what they're doing?
It all depends on what workload we have. So one day we could get a ransomware incident in that's been carried out by somebody, and that somebody is a certain threat actor. And then I'm tasked to go away and say, okay, so this threat actor, they're known for this, this, and this. They've got a data leak site. They generally use these techniques, tactics, and procedures, and then that'll give us what we need to then delve into the incident with incident response and just say, okay, cool, what have we seen within this remit, or are they changing their tactics? Is it what's publicly available, or have you seen different things to what I'm being told about in the open source world? So yeah, it's all workload dependent. But when we don't have those sorts of jobs on, I would say I'm generally sitting in Telegram, underground forums that you can get into without having to pay, I may add, because that's a very important factor.
Because if you have to pay, they can trace your pay. Yeah.
Not only that, if you have to pay, you've then technically just paid a criminal enterprise for access to criminal material.
Of course.
We like to keep it above board, and we don't like to do anything that's within the remit of the legalities. So, yeah.
So if somebody decides, I want to get into threat intelligence, what would your advice be? So starting from zero, what do they need to learn? What are the skills they're going to need? Obviously, research and...
Yeah. So being inquisitive is generally the biggest thing that you will ever get, and passion. So you can do anything that you want to do, as long as you have the passion and the drive to do it. I'm still learning. I'm always learning. Every single day is a school day. And if I said, oh, I'm an expert in this topic, it would be a complete lie. We're all still learning everything all of the time. And that's an important thing to remember. You will make mistakes. You will mess up. But it's about having the confidence to come forward and say, oh my God, I've just done something that I shouldn't have done. Like when you reveal your IP address, for example, on a data leak site, and you're like, oh my God, I'm just exposed where I've come from. And then you sweat for a bit. And then after you've spoken to somebody about it, they're like, it's not that big a deal. You went through Tor. It'll be okay.
But I suppose if you don't own up to making those mistakes, if that information gets into the wrong hands, somebody's then got something on you. So you can be bribed, it can be made worse.
You can be doxxed. And like, let's face it, doxxing is a very scary thing. And there are people out there who literally do it at the drop of a hat. They've got all your details within about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. They know your date of birth, where you live, who you live with, your dependents, where you work, your salary information, your bank detail. It's literally like, yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, I can imagine that's not a nice experience. Okay, so would you recommend it as a job? Like, what are the best things about doing this?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think the best part of the job is when you manage to defend the company against an attack, or when you found information that's been put out there about a company, you have no idea that that information's out there, and you reach out to them and you just say, oh my God, did you know that such and such is talking about you on X Forum? Tighten your defences right now, because you're in the line of sight. And I think that's the most rewarding part of the job. And equally, when you come across stuff that you don't ever want to see, reporting that to the, what are they called again? The Internet Safety Foundation, I think it is.
ISF or the NCA.
No, the ISF. So basically, you can submit anonymous information to them. And I do that quite frequently because of adverts that I see, which is quite obviously relating to CSAM material. And you can just basically paste the Onion address in, say what it is, how you accidentally came across it. And then basically it's like, right, that's in your remit now. And I've accidentally seen it. It was horrible, but it's being dealt with, kind of thing.
So that's the Internet Safety Forum. What I'll do, I'll make sure I put that in here. Or the Safer Internet Forum.
Internet Watch Foundation, iwf.org.uk.
Yeah, we don't want to be sending it to the wrong place.
Yeah, no, we don't want to be sending anyone to like TypeScore domains or anything like that either.
Okay, perfect. So that's useful for people to know. So what about technical skills then? So like, what sort of systems and software or what sort of processes are you using every day from a technical skills perspective?
So you'll probably use a threat intelligence platform. They come in numerous different shapes and sizes, and you will be told that there's a golden cookie that does everything. It doesn't. None of it does. No one vendor does everything for threat intelligence. It's impossible. And if you want to contest that, I would welcome you to come and chat to me. But yeah, so you'll be using threat intelligence platforms. What these do is they gather up the TTPs, the actors, the reports, and they collate information against all of that, send it out to your monitoring capabilities, see if they've picked up any of that activity. And if they have, the poor sock will be alerted. Obviously, it's nice to know that nothing's going on. However, if you get nothing going on for too long, you should test your systems. You should drop something on your systems to make sure that they're working within reason.
Okay. So would you say, obviously, if it's everybody can learn a platform, is there anything particular technology-wise? Do you need coding experience? Do you need certain tools, or you can learn on the job? I mean, did you learn on the job?
Yeah, 100%. So I learned on the job, and I started off with MISP, which I'm sure a lot of people who are aware of threat intelligence will have heard of MISP. But it's basically just where people create galaxies and share indicators. And it's a great place where, yeah, you can share. And sharing is key in threat intelligence. If you don't share things, then how can other people defend against attacks? It's imperative that knowledge is shared. But it would be great if there was one platform that everybody used and then we were all sharing it into the same place. But yeah, so I started off with MISP. Not the most user-friendly, but it's a platform. It does what it says on the tin. And you can do KYC and join up with other companies who are in your industry to sort of, yeah, share those things and tell each other about those things. But yeah, I then moved on to a different platform, which is more sort of incident response focused, I would say. And that's really handy for us just to be able to go in, see the actors, see what TTP, literally like at the click of the screen, you can see what reports we've got in the platform about that actor, where they've come from, links to it. So if you want to read the report, you can actually just link straight out to the report, have a look at the report. And yeah, we've got the ability to be able to create cases so that if we get a job in, we can then create the case from scratch. So we can say, okay, this phishing email came in from this address. That's what the IP was. This is what the link was. And boom, the ransomware hit or whatever it is. So yeah, it's good to be able to link all those things together and to be able to like see it visually as opposed to in MISP. It's quite...
Yeah, it looks like it's lots of different data sources and it's Suricata and it's Snort and it's, yeah, lots of different technologies together. So on the subject of ransomware then, should a business pay a ransom? What's your view?
So should a business pay a ransom? One, it depends if the company can afford the ransom. Two, no, because they're going to be paying a criminal enterprise, which will then just fund more ransomware. Three, I'm going to do like alternating things. Three, yes, because then it gives you a Bitcoin wallet or a Bitcoin address in order to trace back where the funds have come from and gone to.
Can you trace that though?
With a lot of difficulty, I believe it is possible. So even though they use mixers to hide the funds and mask them, some people are able to do something with that. I'm not that person, but there are people out there who are very good at this sort of thing and like linking things together and sort of seeing where things have come from and where things have gone to find that link back. And then four, I just wouldn't want to pay criminals. I mean, I know I've linked straight back to it, but it does link back to, it's not like drug dealing because that's not what it is. But if you've got all these affiliates out on this, let's compare it to that because it's a comparable thing, like in a sort of analogy. You've got all these little affiliates running around on the streets distributing malware. If you pay their big boss, they're just going to pretty much probably double their enterprise and be less afraid. So I think they, to them, like money means that they're invincible.
I suppose the other thing is you're not guaranteed that they're actually going to delete anything. What, the person who threatened you has said they're going to delete your data? They're trustworthy.
No.
They also now know, they can tell the mate, you know, ransomware person too, that you'll pay a ransom.
Yeah. And then the re-ransom can occur and so on and so forth. So yeah, sorry, that's a really important point that I totally missed out.
I suppose it's different if somebody's like stolen your child, then you probably would pay a ransom.
Debatable.
It depends on the child. But you would. But it's not.
It's not a guaranteed thing. Just like if your child was kidnapped, it's not a guarantee that you'd get your child back if you pay the money. So it's like, oh, it's, again, it's just like how, you know, these people compromising hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds, even thousands of companies per year, like they're just like, what we see on the data leak sites is only an absolute fraction of what actually happens, and that's scary.
But look at 23andMe and people's DNA information. It's quite scary.
Really scary.
How do you sleep at night? Like you must see so much. How do you go, oh, it's okay, we're safe as a country, as a business, as an individual?
I think there has to be a point where you go, do you know what? I've done a good job today. That's me. Because your brain does get to a point where you're just like, oh my God, I've looked at, you know, X, Y, and Z, and I've been doing this all day. Or you'll get to a point where you're writing a report and you just hit a total brick wall, and that's when you know you need to stop. You need to just take a little walk away from that computer. You need to take a bit of time for yourself and then come back.
See the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm lucky in that I've got an office that actually faces out to the sun. But yeah, it's about not siloing yourself away so much that you forget who you are, the legitimate person. Not the black hat person, actually interacting with people and making sure that other people are still alive in your life and not just, you know, ignoring them and just going, no, but I'm working, because I think quite a lot of us are prone to be doing that. I did that like yesterday. I was like, but I've still got this little bit to do. And oh my God, like it'll only take me. And then an hour's passed and I'm just like, okay. Okay, I'll put it down.
I've realised I underestimate. Like, I just got this thing to do for this one of these conferences, and it only take 10 minutes. And my husband will be like, "See you tomorrow. Do it on the day I watch the football."
Yeah, and it is like that. You've got to switch off. It's so easy to not switch off, but you've got to switch off, because if you don't, you won't be looking at things with a fresh pair of eyes. You know, you'll just be looking at it with. I had like to compare that meme that's like had all of the life drained from it, and its tears are just like dry. But that's what you'll be like if you don't. You'll have everything drained from you, and you won't want to socialize, and that's not good. That's not healthy.
Yeah, I suppose when you're working on something and there's an active threat or there's a piece of intelligence that something's going to happen, that must be quite hard to go, "Oh, okay, I need to switch this off." But there's teams of people. You're not just working on your own. Surely there's somebody to pass that information off to, or.
Yeah, exactly right. So we saw that actually very recently. So when the UK said, right, we're going to launch missile strikes against the Houthis in Yemen. And it was like, right, okay. So then obviously I'm on standby in the back of my head, like between 8 and 10 p.m. on a Friday night. And I'm just looking at the news. And then on Monday I sign on and I see that, yep, okay, Anonymous Sudan did attack the London Internet Exchange on Friday after the missiles had been launched. So, right. Then that thrusts the UK into a position of, we're actively attacking, we need to be on high alert. Because if we're going against these people who are, I'll say in groups because I don't want to use the word, but in groups that don't conform to the same beliefs that we do, then yeah, it's very dangerous.
What do you, obviously you see a wider spectrum of intelligence. Do you think the next war that we will face as a country is going to be very much cyber driven rather than missiles and bombs?
I think there's already a war going on, if I'm honest. I don't think that the cyber warfare ever stops. It's one of those things that is available to us as long as you're internet connected, right? So everyone at this moment in time has a phone, they have a laptop, they have Wi-Fi in the house. So it's never beyond the reaches of, yeah, what might happen. But I do suspect highly that wars are already happening. Just we don't hear about them because they're digital wars.
Yeah, and it's not in someone's interest to us until they want budget for what they want to do.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I suppose is a bit like businesses. If you want some budget, go and get attacked.
Yeah.
You said something earlier. You said sometimes you have to ring businesses or, you know, contact businesses to say you are in the line of sight. You need to strengthen your cyber defenses. What is the best defense a company can do?
That's like the million-dollar question, right? Like, how do you defend yourself? God, you have literally got me like properly tongue-tied. So I guess the first thing, but this is the thing, it's so tricky for like different types of businesses, because you will get businesses out there who are running literally dog-old Windows servers, and they have to because their draconian system does not run on anything later. And you would say, but surely you would reinvest and upgrade your systems.
This £1 million IoT device is not going to happen. Yeah.
And now you've got a 2 million ransom on your shoulder, but could have upgraded your kit for 500,000. Well, doesn't that kit now look appealing? But yeah, so making sure that things that can be upgraded are upgraded. Also, making sure that passwords are routinely changed, making sure that multi-factor authentication is on. And let's face it, phishing is a topic that people love to have a whinge about. And people are like, oh, you clicked that link. People are busy. People will click links. You cannot blame, well, I mean, if it clicked a link off and caused a ransomware incident, you can blame that one person. However, it's not a fair thing to do to blame that one person, given that they're probably overstretched, overworked, and they literally just flicked at their emails, clicked something, and oh shit, the whole company has...
Yeah, gone down. Yeah. It's basic hygiene, really. It's basic security hygiene. Patch the things, upgrade the things you can, don't share passwords, use a password manager. I suppose it was a tough question. Sorry for that.
It literally, like, when you said that, I was like, I think I knew that it was coming, but I was like, surely not, surely not, surely not. Oh! It's basic stuff, but equally, you've got threat actors that do SIM swapping. You've got threat actors that have access to, I'm not going to name a mobile company, but inside systems at mobile companies, where they can literally just sign in, retrieve a text, check your one-time passcode, and off you go. So where there's a will, there's a way. And I think people who always have a will always have a way, because they'll be finding ways around what we do to do that. And that's why sometimes threat intelligence is a double-edged sword, because if you share how you defended against something, then they're going to know how to attack against it. But likewise, if they're stupid enough to share how they're attacking things, we're going to be clever enough to defend against those attacks. So, yeah.
Yeah. Like you say, it's a double-edged sword. So what piece of advice, I always ask everybody this, and apologies, I've not given you a heads up about this. What piece of advice has stuck with you throughout your career? Or what advice would you give to your younger self that you wish you'd known earlier in your career?
I think it stems back to where I said, if you ever make a mistake, you can always speak up. And unless you're at a really bad company, you'll never be chastised for speaking up. If you're afraid to speak up, then you're at the wrong company. So it was a boss that I had when I was at that company that I was given the opportunity to like move around and do stuff. And he said to me, like, you have so much potential, if only you would realize it. And it was like, oh, but then something actually sunk in and I was like, yeah, I'm wasted on service desk. Give me more. And then literally that's what made that conversation happen. So if he hadn't said that, it was a massive loss when he left that company. But yeah, it was kind of like a pivotal moment where I went, oh, yeah, you're right. And I think for somebody else to have that self-belief in you makes you realise, I can do it, definitely. I've just got to believe that I can do it, because that's what's holding me back.
Yeah, you've got to have that self-belief. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the Be In Cyber podcast. That's been really enjoyable. I hope you've enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, 100%.
Thanks for listening to today's episode with Jules about threat intelligence. Hopefully you've been left inspired. If you've got a topic you'd like to suggest for a future episode, or maybe a guest or a story that you want to share, please get in touch on all the socials. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please like and share.